Welcome on this Monday morning. Justin Blackwell filling in for Evan Bray today and tomorrow as he continues to rest and recoup. I know he was bitten by the Christmas bug over the holidays, so a little more time for Evan to mend, recharge, reset, and then he'll be back in a few days' time. We started off the show talking World Juniors, Canada and Denmark tonight. If you want to get in on the conversation, shoot me a text, 1-877-332-8255. Looking forward to this next conversation. Being the husband of a first responder, the City of Saskatoon and University of Saskatchewan have launched a new research project in hopes of understanding the mental health needs of local firefighters. Now, the study is led by Dr. Camelia Adams, a psychiatrist and a USAS professor who specializes in trauma and mental health, and Joel McNair, who joins me in studio, a longtime Saskatoon firefighter with more than 22 years of frontline experience. Thanks for joining us this morning, Joel.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And a doctor, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Now, together, they are looking into how firefighters cope with trauma, what supports are currently in place, and where gaps may exist. And Joel, you've worked as a firefighter for 22 years now. So first off, just what drew you to the profession?
Well, my dad was a principal at Eyebrow, Saskatchewan, back in the late 70s, early 70s, I guess it would be. And he was a volunteer firefighter, and I wanted to be just like dad. I didn't realize he was a teacher, so I wanted to be a firefighter just like dad. And so ever since I was 3 years old, this has been the dream.
And now you've had to take some time off for post-traumatic stress disorder. How important is it for, I guess, people in everyday life, but definitely first responders, for taking time for themselves?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I got to the point where I was unable to work because of my illness that with PTSD. And so I definitely needed the time. I needed treatment, and I needed to get better so I could get back to what I love doing, which was being a firefighter in Saskatoon.
And doctor, what made you want to study firefighter mental health specifically?
This has been an interest of mine for more than 20 years, and I do treat patients with trauma-related disorders in my practice. In my profession, we do know that certain professions are at higher risk, first responders like firefighters, police officers, paramedics, and this granting, this funding really offered the opportunity to look deeply and to see what's going on in our city.
Dr. Camelia Adams joining us. Joel McNair also joining us, a firefighter. And doctor, we were talking about, you know, this new project that you guys have started in hopes of understanding the mental health needs of local firefighters. What are the main goals of this project?
Are you asking me or Joel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doctor, that question's you.
So, first, we want to see the mental health of firefighters in the current landscape. As Joel probably will tell you, they are facing a higher number of calls, many emergencies, and we just don't know at the present time what's the prevalence of mental health conditions. And we want to do a mixed study where we want to see, to kind of to survey the percentage, the prevalence of these conditions, given the coping and the availability of resources, and to see how much they are accessed. But we also want to see individually what firefighters and their family members are telling us, so kind of a qualitative exploration as well.
And Joel, what kinds of mental health pressures or trauma can firefighters experience during their careers?
I mean, there's the obvious ones of traumatic calls that we respond to, dealing with on scene for can be multiple times a day, multiple hours, and that type of thing. But then it's just also the cumulative effect of years of service and responding to these calls, which can seem like minor things, but it's the old bucket mentality, the bucket story where you fill the bucket. It's only so much room to put everything in before you've got to take a break and reset with that bucket.
And how will your perspective add to this project?
Well, I think that being able to, what I've been describing it as, is I've been a bit of a translator between the research team, the psychiatrists, the U of S, and our members. I can been very fortunate to have Dr. Adams explain to me what's going on, and then I can relay that kind of in firefighter terms so that we can bring more people on board to help with the study and make it as many members as possible come and be a part of the study.
Joel McNair, Saskatoon firefighter, and Dr. Camille Adams joining me as we learn about the new research project launched in hopes of understanding the mental health needs of local firefighters. And doctor, just tell me a little bit about your research approach as this project gets going.
So we prepared a survey, which is going to be a very thorough survey examining the most common conditions, so depression, anxiety, sleep disorders, substance use disorders, and specifically trauma-related disorders such as PTSD. We also want to see the use of professional supports, the critical incident debriefing, the peer support that is available for firefighters in Saskatoon. They have been shown to help very much, but they are not always utilized. We are also going to explore coping mechanisms. This is something that we have uncovered in a previous study that I've done during the pandemic with the physicians in Saskatchewan, and we found several categories that are most frequently used. So we're going to see how those categories of coping mechanisms are prevented for firefighters. And again, we're going to go deeply into their own understanding, their personal experience as they would express it in those 5 to 6 focus groups.
And Joel, are you seeing younger firefighters come up with their approach to mental health a lot being a lot different than maybe years past?
Absolutely. I think just the society awareness of mental health and the importance of it going forward, we see these young firefighters. And I also want to say that it's not just firefighters we're going to be surveying. We've got inspectors, investigators, our fire community support, and our bylaw officers who will also respond to crisis as well. So they're going to be included in this study. I just want to make sure we understand that it's the full gamut of our response out of the fire department that's going to be studied. But they all come with a base level of understanding. The way I describe it is when I took my EMT basic back in 1999, my resilience training was a sign on the wall that said empathy, not sympathy. And that was it. That's all I got. And now just the awareness alone of how important it is to look after yourself so we can continue to respond and help the citizens of Saskatoon.
And how important, as I mentioned off the top, I'm a husband of a first responder. How important is it for, you know, the life at home, for the spouse to just help, you know, with the mental health when it comes to first responders, just being there to listen and just, you know, help with that every, you know, that day-to-day operations when it comes to mental health? How important is a home life in helping them deal with their mental health?
I think it's very important. I think it, we talked before the show and you talked about how your wife needs to come home sometimes and just mm-hmm. let you know how her day went and that. And I think it's just creating that space where it's okay to be not okay, for to use a bit of a meme as it is, so that we can kind of flush it out of our system a little bit and help recharge get the process going again to get up the next day and go do it again.
Saskatoon firefighter Joel McNair joining us. Dr. Camille Adams also joining us from the University of Saskatchewan as we learn more about this new research project in hopes of understanding the mental health needs of local firefighters. And doctor, I know the research is just starting, but what do you hope the findings could mean for firefighters and their families?
Well, you know, we know that probably in Canada at any point in time, the mental health disorders prevalence is almost double than the general population, but sometimes those rates can go significantly higher. So we want to see, and we also know that certain groups of firefighters are at higher risk, particularly urban firefighters, career firefighters. Given, you know, the overdose crisis in Saskatchewan and all the high level of difficulties and trauma that our firefighters are exposed to, we want to see, where are we? Is this severe? Is this manageable? Or we need to advocate for more resources, for more help, for more education to be able to support them and to enhance resilience.
And I know we're going to be talking addictions later on in the show, and the doctor just mentioned overdoses, and you guys are seeing a lot of those calls.
Yes, we are.
In the last, well, even the last year compared to years previous. I mean, how do you, that's not something that's in the job description, is it? Or it didn't used to be, but now it is.
That's right. Yeah. It used to be that, if we went to an overdose, it was a big deal. We would talk about it afterwards. We'd, really debrief all of them. And now, unfortunately, it is, it's a bit routine is what it is. It's not to say that we don't, give 100%. Mm-hmm. We don't. And I mean, we still are responding and we understand the level of importance for us to give our best when we're there. But it is routine because it is some days multiple times a day.
And I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know. What, how do you tackle, dealing with those, you know, day-to-day operations when it comes to overdoses? Because that is a very traumatic experience for everyone involved.
Absolutely. And I think it's that deal where, I mean, I can be a bit of a philosopher when it comes to these things. For me, the way I deal with it is we're going and we're giving, this person who is unfortunately stuck in, their realms of addiction, we're giving them an opportunity every time we go. And that's all it is. And if it's multiple times a day, well, then we feel that this person deserves multiple opportunities to try and work their way out of the addiction.
And Joel, just before I let you go, what do you hope comes out of this research?
What I really hope comes out of this research is just a great understanding of these really good ideas that we have at the fire department that we've been doing with peer support and CISM and then our EVAP program, which is amazing. But we don't have any quantitative evidence to say that it's working or where the gaps are. So I'm really looking forward to some expert opinions on where we can fill those gaps and what it is we need to be doing to protect these young, amazing firefighter paramedics and give them a 30-year career that they're happy and healthy with.
Joel McNair, Dr. Camille Adams, you too. Thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to seeing this project and what it does in the weeks and months to come.
Great. Right. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you very much.
So again, a big project underway in hopes of understanding the mental health needs of local firefighters. Great conversation there with Joel McNair, Saskatoon firefighter for over 20 years, and Dr. Camelia Adams. And definitely we'll be checking in with them later on down the road to see how this project unfolds. You're listening to The Evan Bray Show here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
Gotta call 911. You can hit me up. You know I'm the one whenever you need.
Welcome back on this Monday morning. Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray the next couple of days. Yeah, we're going deep in the bullpen for this one. As I talked about during the morning shows with Mark Loshak and over in Regina, Greg Morgan, we were talking about, Justin Blackwell's never hosted the Evan Bray Show. I'm like, yeah, we're going deep into the bullpen for this one. 18 innings, game three of the World Series. Manager looks down the roster. Who we got left? Oh, Justin Blackwell. All right, I guess we'll throw him in. So I'll be joining you the next couple of days. If you want to get in on the conversation, give me a text, 1-877-332-8255. We started off the show talking World Juniors with the voice of TSN, Matt Cullen, who you hear on this radio station. When every Canada game is playing. He won't be calling tonight's game. He'll be busy. He's doing double duty with the Ottawa Senators, so he'll be calling the Sens Blue Jackets game. But we were talking about Canada start 2-0. There's a but in that 2-0 start. Fun, exciting game over Czechia, 7-5, and then a nail-biter 2-1 over Latvia. Of course, Latvia beat Canada at last year's World Juniors in a shootout. They play Denmark tonight, so expecting a few more goals from Canada tonight in a win there. And then, as you mentioned, looking forward to that a game against Finland, which could decide first place in their pool. So we'll be looking back at some favorite World Junior moments from years past. So many great, great moments from World Juniors past involving Canada. My favorite, and I'll play a clip a bit later on in the show, is back in 1991 when the tournament was held in Saskatoon. Really, it was held in a good chunk of the province. We had games in Saskatoon. There, of course, were games in Regina. Some games were played in Prince Albert, some in Humboldt. But 1991, it stands out for me because I was at most of those games, lucky enough to go there. The one game, Pat Quinn was actually sitting behind us, gave us some pins, and we chatted hockey for a bit, just a young kid back then in 91. But I'll never forget. And back then, it wasn't a it wasn't a tournament style focus. Well, it was. It wasn't round robin, and then it wasn't, you know, quarterfinals and then semifinals and final. It was basically you played your games. If you finished first, you won the gold medal. Second, silver, and so on and so on. And so Canada and the Soviet Union back in 1991, and it was winner takes the gold medal after Finland back then wasn't such a strong team, beat Russia, or actually tied them, forcing that gold medal game, you could call it, against Canada and the Soviet Union. John Slaney with the slap shot from the blue line with about 3 minutes left. Canada would win gold. I'll never forget that moment. Such a fun time with Team Canada back then. Eric Lindros on that team. Such a great, fun tournament. So many great memories. If you have a favorite memory, give us a text. 1-877-332-8255. Coming up, we're going to talk to Sean Haney, who you hear on this radio station with his new show, Real Ag, on the weekend. We're going to look back on the year in agriculture and what's ahead for Saskatchewan farmers in 2026. You're listening to The Evan Bray Show. I'm Justin Blackwell here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Strawberry lipstick state of mind. Welcome on this Monday morning. Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray. The next couple of days, a lot warmer today and tomorrow than we've been used to the last couple of days. Oh, it was cold, wasn't it? Minus 30s. Minus 40s with those wind chills, but the next couple of days, way warmer than normal for this time of year. Normal is around minus 10, minus 11. We'll see those temperatures return on Wednesday. Well, as 2025 comes to a close, it's always a good time to look back on the year in agriculture and what's ahead for Saskatchewan farmers in 2026, from shifting global markets, advancements in technology, drought and climate challenges. The farming community has faced a mix of opportunities and pressures this year. To sum things up and take a look back on the year that was, as well as look ahead into 2026, we're joined by Sean Haney. He is the founder and CEO of Real Agriculture, host of Real Ag on the weekend, which you hear on this radio station, a platform that connects farmers, industry experts, and the public to the latest trends and stories from Canadian agriculture. And Sean joins me now. Sean, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, how are we doing this morning? Happy New Year to you, Justin.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to you, too. And you know what? We just got back from the farm near Kindersley yesterday, and the last couple of nights, well, beating the cold, we were huddled around the TV watching the World Juniors. Do you have a favorite World Junior moment, Sean?
You know what? That's a really good question. One, this tournament is one of the highlights of the year. Latvia seems to be one of our biggest challenges. I would say it's the Eberle goal against the Russians. I distinctly remember that and the excitement around it. And the, if I remember correctly, it was a multiple goal come from behind victory. That's got to be how many years ago now? Like 15 years? Craziness.
Oh, yeah, I think
that was probably my biggest.
I think that was 2009 when that happened.
Oh, was it?
I think so.
There you go.
Or maybe a bit later. Yeah, I'll have to go back and look, but I remember that. And then he did it the next year in Saskatoon, if you remember, against the United States in the gold medal final. They were down 5-3 late. Jordan Eberle, 5-4. Jordan Eberle, 5-5. And I remember Sask-Tel Center just going absolutely bonkers. They would lose it in overtime, but so many good memories.
Oh, it's such a great tournament. It's like, if you kind of look forward to the Christmas season, and a part of that is let's get to Boxing Day so we can get to that first game and the excitement that the tournament brings. This year's crowds have been horribly disappointing. Obviously, there is the issue about maybe Canadians not traveling down for a number of different reasons, but also, you know, I've talked to a couple buddies in Minneapolis who are extremely disappointed with some of the local crowds not showing up. And I don't think that New Year's Eve USA game is actually sold out yet. So the locals have not shown up in Minnie.
All right, Sean, as I mentioned off the top, you started a new show on this radio station, Rail Ag on the Weekend, regular commentary with us. How has that been treating you so far?
It's been really good. You know, there's a lot happening in the world of agriculture right now, obviously in the province of Saskatchewan, but across Canada and really around the world, whether it's, you know, trade issues or it's trying to deal with some of the geopolitics and how that's impacting supply and demand and the movement of goods. You know, Canada's mixed up in a bunch of different issues right now. And so trying to shed light and clarity to all that is a great challenge every week, but we love doing it at Real Agriculture.
Yeah, we're speaking with Sean Haney, founder and CEO of Real Agriculture, host of Real Ag on the Weekend, which you hear on this radio station. So Sean, as 2025 wraps up, how would you best describe the overall year for agriculture in Saskatchewan and Western Canada?
Yeah, well, I think there's probably the best story is kind of the record crop output that we had. You know, if you compare 25 to 24, 24 in the Western Canadian prairies, really disappointed. We started out so well, and then Mother Nature turned up the heat, forgot to drop some rain, and yields disappointed. 25 was the opposite. We started out kind of shaky, and then we never got the heat in July, and we got some July rains that really pushed some of those yields higher. You know, talking to a lot of farmers across Saskatchewan, they'll tell you that their yields were way better than probably what they thought for the most part. What we need is the prices to be better, and profitability is really a concern, I think, for a lot of farmers. But by far, I think the best story for 2025 is what has happened from a ranching and cattle feeding perspective. We have had tremendous prices in the beef markets, and we appreciate the consumers that are listening to continue to spend the money on beef, even with some of these record high prices. Ranchers are finally making money, and it's been a really good news story for 25 in that regard.
And then while you talk about prices, well, let's look ahead to 2026. So what are we expecting with prices and tariffs when it comes to China?
Yeah, it's a good question on the China front. I don't think everybody really knows what's going to happen. You know, we had done some market research earlier in the year, and I think it was like 72% of Western Canadian farmers believe that the Carney government should lift those EV tariffs with the hope of China lifting the tariffs on some of our Canadian agricultural goods like canola. But there's no surety of that. That's not a given 100% bet. And so I think we just kind of sit and wait. And there is going to be a visit by Prime Minister Carney here in Q1, I believe, to China, hopefully to try to lessen the trade tension between Canada and China. But for the time being, those tariffs are on, and our hope is that canola is going to be able to make it to China. Judah might just have to take a bit of a circuitous route through some other countries.
Speaking with Sean Haney, founder and CEO of Real Agriculture, host of Real Ag on the Weekend. Prime Minister Carney, Sean, do you think he's doing enough to you know help farmers when it comes to those tariffs?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, what's the expectation, right? Are they working front and back channels in terms of having a better relationship with China? I think so. They do also have issues with the United States at the same time, where those two countries are not on the best of terms when it comes to trade. Canada very much caught in the middle. So that's a sensitive topic. The number one market for Canadian canola is actually the U.S. and having access to the U.S. biofuel markets. We can't jeopardize that at the same time. Some people, though, believe that there should be some sort of compensation for Western Canadian farmers because of some of these tariffs that really stem from Canada applying those EV tariffs in the first place. So if your expectation is that there should be compensation, you're probably not thinking the Carney government has done enough. We have seen big payments in the U.S. They're going to be rolled out here in January, February, in regards to farmer profitability and trade tension, about $12 billion. We haven't heard that kind of talk out of the Canadian government, but there also hasn't been a lot of loud noise like there's been in the U.S. for that kind of package. We'll have to see if the Carney government changes their mind or if farm groups start to speak louder on that front.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the new year. Sean, a big topic of discussion this year with farmers, well, not just this year, in years past as well, and we mentioned it, dealing with the drought. Has this issue been properly addressed, do you think?
Well, we need to do more, like, I guess, better. We need to talk to a better, higher power, maybe, or something. This Mother Nature just has not last year we had moisture in parts, and like I said, the crop yields showed it. The trouble is we don't have a lot like that deep reserve, right? So if Mother Nature wasn't so timely in 26, we're kind of back behind the eight ball again. So I'm not exactly sure how we would want the government to address it. I know farmers themselves are looking for the most, you know, minimal of till practices and trying to disturb the land as little as possible to conserve that moisture. Also getting into trying some other practices as well, leave more stubble on the ground to try to trap more of that snow and those kinds of things. I think farmers are doing their part. We just need Mother Nature to really come through here.
And is it a learning process for everyone involved? Because, I mean, you look back, 10, 20 years ago, drought maybe wasn't so much of an issue. Is it a learning process for everyone? Okay, maybe I should try this. Maybe I should try that. It seems like it's a learning process for everyone involved.
Well, I think so. And farmers are a creative lot, and they're innovative, right? And so the key is to figure out what works on your ground. If you're maybe a little bit in more like eastern Saskatchewan, maybe you are dabbling in some of things like cover crops and things like that to try to see if that provides you with any sort of advantage. But if you're out in the southwestern corner, you're probably thinking that's not a good fit, right? And so you it's about accessing some of the extension work with the Saskatchewan government or the University of Saskatchewan. There's a lot of great research being done there, and trying to do the best you can to get to the other side of this weather cycle.
We're speaking with Sean Haney, founder and CEO of Real Agriculture and host of Real Ag on the Weekend. And Sean, of course, many producers have relied on programs like agri-stability and crop insurance. Are those enough to help farmers?
Well, that's a big complaint that farmers have. Yeah, I think it's only about 53. We did market research with our audience at Real Agriculture, and 53% of our audience says they're using agri-stability. That number goes higher as the farm gets larger. It gets like 72% of farms are using agri-stability with if they're over $5 million in revenue. You know, we're going to be looking as we get into next summer, a lot more talk about a new Canadian ag framework. And I think there's going to be a lot of attention on something like agri-stability and then questioning the provincial leaders as well as territorial and the federal ag minister, Mr. McDonald, on does there need to be significant improvements to this? Is it actually delivering on what farmers need? One of the big focuses that smaller farms have here is, man alive, it's not simple. I have to pay an accountant to fill out the paperwork and do all that kind of stuff. I hear this from the audience all the time, but at the same time, does it actually deliver and provide a risk management tool so that farmers have confidence in the fact that if they're not having a good year, there is going to be some sort of surety of a payout? That's a lot of criticism that a lot of farmers have. And a lot of farmers now, they're using their account to help them with that filing because the payment and it's a critical part of the process for the risk management program.
And what trends or changes in ag policy, global markets or climate should Saskatchewan farmers be watching out for next year?
Well, I think it's all on the policy front, and I think all attention right now is on what happens between Canada and the U.S. And as we get closer to this July 1st, 2026 date where, the review is, I guess, has already kind of started, but that's the official date where all three countries have to state their position on what they want to do on the go forward. Some people will say that, President Trump's going to withdraw. I don't necessarily believe that. I think it's going to be we're going to see a pretty rough road here for 6 to 9 months as these three countries negotiate maybe a trilateral deal. There's talk of them moving to bilaterals. It's going to be bumpy, and I think it's going to be a real test of Canadians' ability not to be too offended by some of the things that are going to be said, especially coming out of the White House. At the end of the day, though, I think for all three countries, the best economic solution here is to have a trade agreement, and I think even the Americans know that. But it is going to be a bumpy road for a lot of Canadian industry as we try to get to the other side of these negotiations.
Yeah, it'll be a story we're closely following the start of 2026. So, Sean Haney, thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great rest of your break. Happy New Year, and enjoy the rest of the World Juniors as well.
Yeah, you too. And thanks so much for the interest in agriculture and everybody out there in the audience. Happy New Year.
Absolutely, Sean. Take care. Sean Haney, host of Real Ag on the Weekend here on this radio station, founder and CEO of A Real Agriculture, as we look back on the year that was for farmers and a look ahead. And as he mentioned, a bumpy road to start when it comes to dealing with, well, not just tariffs with China, but also what's going on in the United States. I'm Justin Blackwell, filling in for Evan Bray here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Monday morning, Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray today and tomorrow as he continues to rest and recoup. I know he's a bit under the weather before he left for the Christmas holidays. I think that bug got him pretty good. It was getting a lot of people good over the holiday break, myself included. Started Christmas Eve for me. Did the morning show here for Mark Loshak in Saskatoon and then got home and then, not feeling so good. And then Christmas Eve, basically spent by myself, felt a lot better. Christmas Day, toughed it out with the family. And then, as I mentioned, when I was speaking with Sean Haney, we went out to the farm in Kindersley for a couple of days, started to feel much better out there. So, if you are one of the very many under the weather right now, there is hope. There is a light at the end of that dark tunnel. So Evan will be back in a few days. And, I mean, a lot to talk about once 2026 rolls around. If we had Sean Haney just on talking about agriculture, it'll be interesting to see how those tariffs play out with China and then what's going on with the United States. He mentioned China. I mean, we have those EV tariffs and he's not necessarily sure how that plays out. Well, if you remove the EV tariffs, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to remove the tariffs when it comes to canola. So we'll see how that plays out. We also had a good conversation earlier with a local firefighter here in Saskatoon, Joel McNair, and then Dr. Camelia Adams as well, as those two are part of a new research project in hopes of understanding the mental health needs of local firefighters. A fascinating conversation as they dive deeper into this study. And Joel has had to take some time off dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and talking about how important it is to take time for yourself, how the younger firefighters coming up and their approach to mental health is different than in years past. Such an important conversation, being the husband myself of as a first responder. You see some of the stuff that they bring home. They don't want to, but sometimes they do. And for family members, very important to be there just to hear them vent if they need to and just understand a bit better of what's going on in their work, because the mental stress when it comes to first responders is unbelievable. So great work there being done by Joel McNair and Dr. Camelia Adams. And we also started off the show talking World Juniors with that tournament in a full swing. One of my favorite times of the year. Sean Haney talked about one of his favorite moments, the Jordan Eberle goal against Russia back in the day that would send that game into overtime. And then Canada would win. And it was a fascinating call by Gord Miller on that call. And that was back in 2009, the semis against Russia. And then, as I mentioned, Eberle did it again the next year in Saskatoon against the United States in the semifinals, scoring two late goals to send that game into overtime. The U.S. would win that game, unfortunately, but a fantastic tournament that was put on. But I mentioned 1991, the World Juniors in Saskatoon back in the day. That was my favorite memory. I was able to be there for most of the games. And back then, it wasn't a quarterfinal, semifinal, championship kind of playoff format. It was you played your games. If you finished first place, you got the gold medal. And so the round robin pretty much went according to Canada. They would tie the Americans 4-4. The Soviets would need a win against Finland on the second last day. If they got that win, they would get the gold medal. So the next day's games wouldn't really have mattered. I guess they would have played for the bronze. But I remember Canada had won their game that day. And then we were in the car heading back home. And we had learned, because the Soviets were playing Finland in Regina, and then we had learned that Finland had tied the game late, 15 seconds remaining, which would force that gold medal game back in Saskatoon. And Canada would win on a slap shot by John Slaney from the point. Fantastic tournament. Eric Lindros on Team Canada. Pavel Burya, Darius Kasparaitis, Vyacheslav Kozlov for the Russians. So much great talent from that tournament. One I will remember forever. Well, coming up, we're going to speak with political columnist Brian Lilly. A look back on the year that was in politics here on the Evan Bray Show on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.